Hello and good day, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Magic, the First Pioneers Podcast. This is a podcast all about the Pioneer format, and we keep our listeners up to date with what is new, interesting, and powerful in the world of Pioneer. I am joined here by my co-host, as well as a special guest. If you guys wouldn't mind introducing yourselves.
Hey, it's me, it's Ryan. I'm coming at you from the Tokyo area of Japan, near Yokohama. And our special guest today is someone that you know.
I am Amit, aka Ekeros MTG. I am an MTG streamer, aspiring pro, and pioneer enthusiast. So I'm happy to be here, as usual.
Yes, we had you on, eight episodes back, maybe? I think we were talking about the history, maybe, of Pioneer. Was that correct?
Yeah, we had that, and we had the Vampires episode, I think, a while ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Did we do Vampires? We did something.
We talked about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we dove deep.
I don't think we didn't do a deep dive. I think we're just talking about his decks that he's playing.
Oh yeah, maybe right, that was.
But that is what we are doing today. Is we're taking a bit of a deep dive. Yes. Let me quick introduce the topic and why we brought you onto the show. You know, we love to have pros on who are playing popular decks of the format to kind of break them down, tell us what's good, what's bad, what's changed, and what to do when you're playing this kind of deck or when you see it online. So the deck that we are looking to talk about today, one of what we are seeing as hopefully one of the big decks of the upcoming format, Black Red Arcanist.
Yes, I love Rakdos.
Yeah, it discards things, it doesn't have counter spells. Right up your alley over there.
So before we jump into the deck list and all that stuff, should we just kind of talk about bannings real quick? Like how you guys feel about what happened? Because last time we recorded, we talked about only Uro. We didn't talk about anything
else. Yeah, so when we last talked, we said, hey, they'll probably just ban Uro. They'll see what else is unfair or fair after that. They went a little bit harder than that. They banned Uro. They banned out Reclamation. And they banned out Teferi. They also banned out the Oops All Spells deck by banning both of the spies that came from that deck.
So how do you guys feel? Should we start with Amit, maybe? What's your thoughts on the bannings?
Yeah, that was a really big announcement. I wasn't expecting so many bans. Wizards are usually a little less lighter on the trigger, but they figured out something needed to go. And I do think most of the bans are good. Uro needed to go. I feel like Reclamation was kind of oppressive as well, in the sense that with combination of Uro, just didn't let any decks go on the middle. You either had to go super low or super high.
Mm.
I think that the Fairy ban was a bit excessive. I mean, Pioneer is short on ways to interact that are not black, as we're going to see today.
Mm-hmm.
And Teferi was one of those ways, despite stopping other avenues of interaction. But it's still a fine ban, in my opinion. And Oops was probably not too strong, but I'm not sad to see it go. And I say this as someone who had success with Oops. I mean, the deck is just not fun for anyone.
Hmm. That's why it's called Oops, I Win.
Yeah. Look at the cards.
What do you think, Kevin? How do you feel about the bannings?
Yeah, and it's one of those things where a lot of people were kind of asking for this. They were asking for Teferi, they were asking for Uro, and it does seem a little strange. You know, we looked through what's popular right now, what are the big decks, and most of the big decks are, it's things like aggro decks, other than the few Uro decks. So it seems strange to me to hit the decks that aren't aggro even harder after they just lost one of their biggest tools to fight against aggro. So it's a little bit strange there. We'll see how it plays out. Really, and we kind of said this on our last episode, is that the only place where it might be good is if getting rid of Uro opens up room for there to be non-Uro decks that can beat on aggro. So that's what we'll see, is if there's other mid-range, basically.
Yeah,
so
we can.
Can I add something?
Yeah.
So I actually think, my good friend Claudio also says that, the format is just going to be a lot of aggro decks now because Uro is banned. But I actually think it's going to be the opposite. Uro wasn't actually good versus the aggro decks because the aggro decks went so low that they could just ignore Uro. Boas Burn had a really good matchup versus Uro and Omnath, as weird as it sounds. But those decks pushed out all the decks that prey on aggro. And these are the decks that I tend to play. Arcanist, as we're going to talk today. Vampires, these decks just eat burn for breakfast. But if your opponent escapes Uro, you're just dead. So I actually think it's going to do the opposite, and you're going to see people going away from aggro towards more midrange.
Yeah, I think that's a great optimistic way to look at it. And I think that we are seeing some of that, you know, and it is also true that Burn was one of the better decks at dealing with Uro because they had the, you know, they had ways to stop life gain. They had ways to exile it for cheap. So they were able to go around it, whereas some of the other aggro decks did have a little more problem, as well as the decks that beat on aggro decks had problems. You know, I do still consider Vampires to be a mostly aggro deck more than midrange. Maybe you can correct me on that. You were kind of the expert. But I do think that that's the kind of deck exactly that, you know, you can play something like in a Gifted Aetherborn in your main deck and just be crushing to the Burn matchup. And you're allowed to do that when you're not worried about a three mana card just ruining your whole day.
Yeah, the thing that I was going to add, about, you know, the bannings and stuff, I think we're going to see so many more cards being played than before, you know, without Uro. Like I said, for example, last week, that I think Delve's going to be back. We have all these strategies open to us. And, like, Dredge was an okay deck before we got the Oops All Spell package. So Dredge is still be playable. Like, if, you know, all those cards that people were playing, you know, you could play most of them, I think, as far as, like, maybe not the modal cards, but, like, the creature package. But anyways.
Yeah.
So, should we move on to Arcanist then? Unless there's anything else you guys want to say.
Arcanist, yeah, absolutely. So, does this fit right in that example of, you know, Arcanist? I don't know how the Uro matchup perfectly was, but it was certainly a deck that was around before this ban. It's not brand new, but it certainly is picking up in popularity. And, you know, you are the sole possessor of the Titan now with Kroxa in the deck. Do you want to give us a little bit of a rundown? We've got the latest of your deck list open. Just give us a quick, like, these are
key cards.
These are the cards that are in every version of the deck. And if there's any that are like, oh, not every deck plays this, just try and call those out if you want.
And also, how does it win?
Okay. So, let me start by saying I do think Arcanist was secretly a very good deck before the bannings, just because of a disruption package, which we're going to touch on a bit later. But I kind of got clued on this by my friends from Team TAC, which are like Claudio, Inixtrad, and Alemilan. We've been talking about this. We've been trying the deck for a while, and after the bans, it just felt like the deck is so well positioned. So, what is Arcanist? As the name may suggest, this is like a deck that plays Dreadhorde Arcanist to try to maximize its potential. The card is very strong. It's a 1/3 for 2 that when it attacks, it lets you recast spells from your graveyard if their converted mana cost, or mana value, I guess now we should say, is lower than its power or equal to it. Now, I said before that Pioneer has a lack of interactive spells, of good interactive spells. Well, that's not the case for Black. You get to play both Thoughtseize and Fatal Push. So Arcanist basically lets you double and triple up on those spells, which are the best ways to interact in the format. They're really cheap. They're really efficient. So I would say Rakdos Arcanist is a mid-range deck, but it's not classic mid-range. It doesn't try to go exactly over the top. It mostly tries to set up snowballing threats. Now, with Arcanist, this means that the deck plays Kroxa. Kroxa, as you said, the only Titan left. I firmly believe that Kroxa, people are going to find out that Kroxa is almost as good as Uro. I think Uro was the best counterplay to Kroxa because you would Kroxa and they would discard Uro. And then every time you attack, you feed their Uro, but it doesn't go the other way around. So it was like a really weird dynamic. And that's gone. Like, people have to actually deal with Kroxa now. So I would consider these cards to be the core of the deck. You play 4 Kroxa, you play 4 Arcanist, you play 4 Thoughtseize, and you play some number of push. And I think you can put into the core the card Claim to Fame. It's the modal card, like it's the split card that lets you both get a creature back from your graveyard to play if it costs 2 or less, and then for 2 mana, it gives it haste from a graveyard. So that card is really good at keeping Arcanist going, because your opponents are going to kill it. And also giving it haste and pumping its power gives you the option to make really sweet plays. So these are what I would consider the core of the deck, right? So as I said, the deck tries to win by deploying these threats and some other which are not core, but like are mostly played in all the decks, to both disrupt the opponent and snowball until the point where even if the opponent manages to resolve relevant spells, they're so far behind it doesn't matter.
Okay.
Oh, also, before I forget, the deck gets to play Lurus the Dream Den of the Dream Den as its companion, and that's pretty huge when all of your threats are so good and you just get to draw the extra card. Companions are really strong.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've seen you streaming this a lot recently, and I'm just wondering, why is this like one of your go-to decks? Why is this one of your favorite decks right now?
So the deck is... I really like the deck, first of all, because I really like playing with Kroxa. I really think the card is super good, and I'm already really practiced with like the play patterns.
Mm-hmm.
Timing your Kroxa, like the first half and the second half, and how you feed it and stuff like that, come more naturally to me. But the deck also feels like not only did it not get nerfed by the bans, it lost like a lot of its hardest matchups, which were Jeskai, Luka, which can't play Teferi anymore, which stops Arcanist. So that's a really big deal. Omnath decks lost Uro. Now they have a harder time going over the top of you. People are just playing all these aggro, low-to-the-ground decks, and you just prey on those. And as I said, I think the deck gets to play the best interaction in Pioneer. Some of the best threats, Arcanist and Kroxa, have to be close to the top, if not the top. And the list is pretty well set up. And you got the new pathways from Kaldheim. And this deck's biggest problem before the bannings was its mana. It just couldn't cast its spells half of the time. And it was still competing.
Like Dragon Skull Summit, I think you said, or online you said, was like one of the big problems, is that you can't always have it coming in untapped, which is bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Because the curve of the deck is so low. Like, you play a lot of 1-drops, a lot of 2-drops, and, like, 1 3-drop in the main deck. So you really, really need to go 1/2 into 1+2 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And if your hand is Castle Lothwain and Dragonskull Summit, you just can't do that.
Mm.
Or if you try to go Stitcher Supplier into Arcanist, into Claim the Firstborn, sometimes you don't have the double red. And now this is much easier, which gives this deck a lot of power, honestly.
So I think this kind of is a good segue into my next question, which is like the other builds that you have tried. And I know, Kevin, you kind of had a mid-range Rakdos deck that you kind of wanted to talk about as well. So, you know,
I mean, maybe at the end of the show, I mean, I want to focus on the Arcanist part of it, because it's very different.
So, yeah, what other stuff have you tried out in Arcanist? I know you, like, at the beginning of this new meta, you were trying out a couple different versions. So what's worked and what hasn't worked for you so far?
Okay, so let me start with what didn't actually work, which is the Scourge version. Scourge of the Skyclaves is a card I play a lot in Modern, in Rakdos Shadow. And the card is really strong. Basically, it has power and toughness, like, defined by the life total of the player. And the lower the life total is, the bigger the card gets. Like, it can easily be an 8/8/4/2, which is obviously very, very good. Now, the card had an issue, and that issue was Uro. Because if your opponent was at 17 life and they played Uro, all your scourges die. If your opponent escapes Uro, all your score just, like, gets smaller. And if it attacks, it gets... And with Uro gone, I thought maybe Scourge could do well again. The problem with the Scourge list I tried... So, in addition to the cards I already spoke about, we played Stitcher Supplier, which is also in the current version. And then Bomat Couriers, so you can get early damage through. And some other removal spells, so you can clear the way. And... the plans don't actually mesh up very well. Scourge kind of wants you to play in a certain pattern, which doesn't actually fit into the Arcanist pattern. You also had to take a lot of damage to yourself to enable the Scourge, and that could be a problem when trying to flashback thoughts. It's like 3 times a game, the damage adds up. You just randomly die to like your opponent having a creature. So I tried that. Unfortunately, that doesn't work. I hope we get Lightning Bolt at some point, but that might be a bit too much. But the version that has been working is basically the version that was being played before the bannings, which is the version that's running Young Pyromancer and Village Rites as an additional engine. Now, that version... So, why is this version working? You basically get to add to your... So, we had 4 suppliers, 4 Kroxa, 4 Arcanists, 4 Thoughtseize, 4 Claim Fame, and, like, 4 Push. So, that's, like, a big chunk of the deck. And then you get to fill out the rest of the spots with Young Pyromancer, which is a 2-1 that gives you a token for each time you cast an instant or sorcery spell, Village Rites, which is to sacrifice a creature to draw cards, and Spark Harvest, which has to sacrifice a creature to destroy a walker or a creature for 1 mana. So these mesh up really well with the Arcanist plan, because Pyromancer wants you to play a lot of spells. This is what Arcanist does. Village Rites lets you draw more cards and is a really good proactive 1 mana spell, which is what Arcanist is really lacking in Pioneer. You'll see it in Legacy. You used to see it in Legacy, flashbacking Ponder and Preordain. But it's banned now because it was too strong doing this. So flashing back Divination is really, really strong. Now, Spark Harvest also complements it really well because it lets you use Arcanist to kill much more expensive threats. Like, attacking with Arcanist and sacrificing a token to kill a Nissa is a really common play pattern that puts you so far ahead on tempo because your opponent just spent 5 mana for you to spend no mana to solve their threat. So that's all these plans really mesh up nicely. And I think that's the core of the deck. That's the version of the deck that I'm going to be playing for a while now. I do think that this version has weaknesses. The fact that you have to play cards that are very conditional, like Village Rites. Imagine if you draw Village Rites but don't draw the Pyromancer, and suddenly you have to sacrifice your Arcanist, and then you don't get the snowball going, can be really clunky at times, but I think the power level warrants playing some more situational cards to give you those options.
Okay.
No, I was going to say, so, you know, you talked a little bit about your other version, you know, of Rakdos. Can you give Kevin some thoughts on his idea of a more mid-rangey version real quick? I'm kind of interested.
Table that, Ryan. I want to talk through this deck some more because I still think there's interesting things to point out. You know, I want to talk Magmatic Channeler because I think that that's a pretty recent addition. You know, yeah. I hadn't seen that in the older lists. And I know that it's something you were kind of struggling with. Sometimes you really liked... you've got it as a one of in this current list we're looking at, but can you talk about that card just real quick? And that one, for anyone who doesn't know, it's the one in a red wizard. It's normally a 1/3, but if you have 4 more instants and sorceries in the graveyard and or sorceries, it gets +3/+1, becomes a 4/4. And then the main part is that you can tap and discard a card to exile top 2 cards in your library, and you can play them until the end of
the turn.
Oh no, you choose one and you can play it this turn. There you go.
So Channeler is a card recently, like it's a pretty new card. And I think Claudio was the first one to play it in Arcanist like a couple of months ago. And I was looking for ways to round up the deck. I had like what I would consider to be 3 flex slots, in which are right now filled with 2 Claim the Firstborn and 1 Channeler. And the Channeler is there because I just wanted the extra card selection, the extra threat. And I think Channeler really excels at enabling Kroxa. So Channeler, what it gives you is card selection, which is generally pretty good, but Channeler doesn't feed itself. What do I mean? That is, when you activate it, it's not like a looter. You don't draw a card and discard a card. You just discard a card, and you get a card in return, but it doesn't go to your hand. So at some point, you're going to run out of resources. But if you discard Kroxa, and if you discard cards from your hand when they're Kroxa in the yard, you can actually take advantage both of the discard part and of like the card selection part of Channeler, which makes it really good. I might want to try more in the future. I might want to try a version that eschews Young Pyromancer completely for more Channelers. Not sure how that looks, but the card is really interesting and really strong. And sometimes just having a 4/4 body, it's like a Tarmogoyf, small Tarmogoyf, and it's it's huge because the creatures in this deck are pretty small. It's usually a bunch of 1/1s and 1/3s. So you can have trouble with the opponent going like Steel Leaf Champion. And then you're like, oh, I can't do anything about this. I have to actually kill this instead of blocking, which is a problem.
Well, there's one more card that I wanted to point out real quick that I really liked in this deck since Kevin pointed out Magmatic Channeler. Everything else I thought, you know, it's kind of easy to understand. I've seen it played before. I kind of understand the core. But there's a one of Kolaghan's Command, and I've been trying that out in Pioneer. It's been a little bit underwhelming, and I just think because I can't use all the modes, this feels really good in this deck because of the ability to get back all of those creatures, you know, all of those threats. Am I correct in saying that?
Absolutely. I think Kolaghan's Command has definitely the issue of, like, for 3 mana, it tends to be lower impact, but it does a lot of important things for the deck. First of all, it gives you out to artifacts, which are the usual mode of graveyard hate in Pioneer. Gravedigger's Cage, both Crypt and Lantern, you can force the sacrifice, which is really nice. Making them discard a card tends to be important when you have Kroxa. Kroxa is all about making your opponent extremely low on resources, so anything that like hits their hand is really nice. And yeah, returning like your 2 drops or even a Lurus that died can really swing a late game. And this deck plays really well into the late game, and this is part of it. Also, you can sometimes flash it back with Arcanist because Claim Fame pumps the Arcanist up to 3 power.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be really, like, backbreaking. Getting to recast a Kolaghan's Command, if you kill a creature on board with the shock, that's even better. It's just so good. But only I think one. It's...
I was going to say only one, though?
Yeah, only one because it's pretty clunky. Being a 3-drop that doesn't affect their board in the most relevant way in some matchups can be really tough. I usually think about adding another one in the sideboard, but then I think it's a bit too low impact, but I like having access to one. I mean, this deck sees a lot of cards in a lot of games because you get to draw, like, each Village Rites tends to draw you, like, 4 cards because of Arcanist, because you can recast it. So you end up seeing a lot of your deck. So having one effect like this in the deck is pretty big a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I see, like, you have your Thought Seize for discard, you have your Spark Harvest to be able to kill stuff, you know, you have your Claim the Fame to bring stuff back. Your deck's already doing a lot of that, and this is kind of just adding one more to each of those, right?
Yeah, like it's just like that extra boost for the late game that you sometimes need.
And it's a 2-for-1 that affects the board, which is nice and rare, especially at 3 mana. So you did just point out the Spark Harvest, and that's kind of where I wanted to go next as far as taking a deep dive on some of the card choices here. You know, your current 1 mana removal suite, and you are focusing on 1 mana spells because you want them to be able to flash back with Arcanist. You've got 3 Fatal Push and 2 Spark Harvest. Now, I do want to say the other one that I've seen frequently is the Blood Chief's Thirst. That one is a sorcery that it's a creature 2 or less, creature or planeswalker 2 or less. You can kicker it for 3 to hit any creature or planeswalker. Instead, you're running the Spark Harvest, which is just creature or planeswalker, but you always have to either sacrifice a creature or play 4 more. So, like, what's the what makes Spark Harvest better, or like, is there a reason why you'd play one versus the other?
So I think it's a really good question. In the versions I saw earlier, they were playing like 2 Blood Chief's Thirst in the main deck, 2 Spark Harvest in the main deck, and like 3 push in the sideboard or something along those lines. And the goal, like the role that Harvest and Thirst play is that you sometimes need to get rid of bigger creatures and planeswalkers. And when you recast them with Arcanist, you can target whatever you want as long as you play the additional cost. So for Thirst, that would be 3 mana. For Harvest, either sacrifice a creature or 4 more mana. But the more I played, the more I realized how much Thirst is clunky. I usually like to play a couple of Thirsts in my black decks to complement the pushes because it's really nice to have the flexibility, and just having more 1 mana removal spells is great. But Spark Harvest just, like, is, I think, low-key one of the reasons this deck actually works. Being able to pay 1 mana and sacrifice a creature, and you have a lot of creatures lying around when you have Pyromancer, Stitcher Supplier, just, like, roaming through your deck, is so powerful. I mentioned the play patterns versus monogreen devotion before, where they play a 4-mana walker, get one activation, and then you go like, 1 mana, I killed this. And you gave up a token. And that's fine. You're absolutely okay with this. And they're super behind. Spark Harvest is also the card that basically enables Claim the Firstborn. Claim is a really strong card when you have enough sacrifice outlets. 4 Village Rites is not quite enough, so the extra Spark Harvest really give you that extra push to make Claim good. I do think Claim is a bit worse right now in the meta, so I can see cutting one or even both from the main deck, but I still think Spark Harvest is just too good to give up on. I think the card is really, really strong. It is one of the reasons this deck can compete for as long, like, into the late game as it does.
Okay. I like that a lot. I've got another question. I think I've heard you talk about this on your stream, but some people might be asking, okay, why isn't Tybalt in this deck, or Valky is the front side that you could play with Loras?
It's too expensive.
So that's a good question. What?
I was going to say it's too expensive right now.
It's actually down
to... I was hoping the price would drop on Moto, and it's still like 30-40 bucks or something.
Yeah, as opposed to the 80 it was before, which is
not true.
I was so happy to sell the... I opened 2 in the first couple of days, and I sold each for like 40, and I was so happy, and it was like 80 each. Anyway, I think Tybalt is like really nice. It can actually be like the Valky half. Okay, so let's start with Tybalt. Like, the Planeswalker is really strong. I did play it in the deck. Again, I think it was Claudio's list that played it. Played 1 or 2 in the main deck. It was really nice. I cast, like, the Tybalt half a couple of times, and it was pretty good in certain matchups, like Niv-Mizzet or Yorion decks. Just having 7-mana Walker in your Lurus deck gives you a lot of late-game power. But the Valky side, while I thought it would be good, it lost a lot of its power due to the bannings. You can't snag Uros anymore. And also, everyone's just playing those lower to the ground decks, where, like, if you play Valky versus Auras, they would be like, okay, I'll just suit up the creature I have on board and kill you. Or if you play it versus Burn, they'll be like, okay, I'll White Slash this and get my creature back. It's like you didn't do anything. And I think it was a bit too low impact. That's why I'm trying Magmatic Channeler. That's basically the slot where, like, the flex slot that I'm trying right now. And I also think Kroxa just fills that role slightly better. I could see it being good in different metagames. And that's a lot of what, like, being competitive with Magic is about. Like, changing your list to the metagame. I just don't really like it right now.
Okay. Is there a time where you think that the metagame would be more appropriate for it, or are you just...
Maybe. If you see a lot more Niv to Light decks, for example, I could definitely see playing more Valkys, because taking their Nivs is really nice. They have... Their removal suite is a lot clunkier, and having access to a 7-mana Walker, as I said, can really swing the late game. And this deck, it might give you the extra edge to play, like, into the really long game system.
Got it. Okay, yeah, both those things make sense. Interesting. I was gonna say,
you know, while we're talking about, like, card choices, I kind of wanted to talk about choosing cards with Thought Seize, if you guys don't mind me segueing into this topic real quick.
I've got one more. This is kind of a one-off deck question. It's just something you were talking about, where, like, oh yeah, of course it's a Lurrus deck. Is there any world where you would try a non-Lurrus version of this deck? Is there any cards that you'd be interested in at 3 or 4 mana that you can't currently play?
Yeah, for sure. So I can name like 3 or 4, I guess, which would be a Bonecrusher Giant is huge. Like, the card is just so good, giving you 2 and 3 plays. Like, versus, if you play it versus Burn, I played some Mono Red before the bannings, right? And Mono Red doesn't play white, and it plays Bonecrusher Giant. And people were saying, like, is this actually good? Like, why are you giving up on Lurrus and Boros Charm? And then they played it. It's like, Bonecrusher single-handedly can beat Burn. It's that good. So Bonecrusher is a card I definitely miss at times. Rankle is another one. Rankle just solves so many of your problems. Like, Apostle of Purifying Light is such an annoying card. It's the pro black 2-drop. And you just get to make them sack it. And it's so much fun. And Liliana, Waker of the Dead is another one that, like, if you want to compete into the late game with the Niv decks and the Yorion decks, then sometimes having a Walker that makes them discard is better than having Rankle that makes them discard.
Okay.
So these are, like, three off the top of my head. So I did try them in the Rakdos deck, in the Scourge deck, my bad. And I think they were good there, but I just think the whole shell just wasn't good enough, and this shell just benefits so much from Lures. I don't really see going away from it for now.
All of those card choices.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
I was going to say, all those card choices sound like my Waste Not deck.
Yeah, this card is really good in Pioneer right now, I think.
Yeah.
It's really a way to punish your opponents for trying to, like, keep card. Yeah, what this card does. Yeah.
Whereas before, you didn't want them to be discarded because you didn't want cards in their graveyard.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, discard them all.
It's really, it's not only Uro, but also Jeskai Luka decks, or like Yorion decks in general, have such a high density of threats that, like, you would go thoughties, take their hand, and they would just stop deck something. Because their whole hand is, their whole deck is hammers. Mm. You can't stop them.
Mm-hmm.
And now without Teferi, it's a lot harder for them, which is, I find, really nice. Some people don't.
So do you guys want to talk about Thoughtseize real quick?
Yeah, why don't we go ahead into that? So you were talking about a little bit of... So what we wanted to transition to is we've talked about, like, the deck, why you've made these current choices. Now Ryan would like to transfer to some specifics to playing the deck. So you were talking about the biggest, probably... One of the most difficult things in any format, I think, is discard spells. You know, we have Thoughtseize. You're going to be casting a lot of Thoughtseize with this deck. What are Thoughtseize choices like for the Rakdos Arcanist decks?
So, like, what do you want to get rid of, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think that's a really big part of playing the deck. Usually when I stream the deck, you will see me Thoughtseizing on turn one and then tanking for, like, maybe even 2 minutes, just trying to figure out how the game would play out given any of my choices. And I think that's the biggest thing that guides me in my Thoughtseize decisions. So, as I said before, this deck basically tries to disrupt your opponent just for long enough for you to get your engines going. So what you take is a lot of the time what slows them down the most. So this could be taking their only removal spell in hand, so you can untap and resolve Arcanist, and then you already have another Thoughtseize lined up. Or it can be their Llanowar Elves, so their 3-drop doesn't come online before your 2-drops do.
Hmm.
But sometimes, for example, your opponent would have 3 removal spells in hand. Taking those doesn't change the way this game is going to play out in the next 3 turns, because no matter what you take, if they have, like, push and a wild slap, well, that's not a good example. Like, 2 fatal pushes, you take one and they still kill your Arcanist on turn 2. So instead you have to figure out how you beat 2 removal spells. This usually means you want to take their biggest threat. Or sometimes they just have a threat that you just can't beat. I was playing in a prelim a couple of days ago, and my opponent was playing this really sweet blue-red dragons deck. And they had Goldspan Dragon in their deck. And I looked at it and I said, I have 2 cards in my deck that kill it. They're called Spark Harvest. And if I don't find them or Thoughtseize this, I'm just dead. I can't waste this. So I had to prioritize taking that card away. So,
even though it wouldn't affect the game until 4 turns later.
Yeah, exactly. And then on the other hand, I was playing versus Mono Green and they had Vroniclex in hand, but very few mana sources. So they died with this Vroniclex in hand because I took the elf. So I think when you Thoughtseize, the first thing, you get a lot of information, right? You get to see their hand, and then you get to imagine how the game is going to play out, given their draws and your draws for the next, like, 3-4 turns. So what you really want to do is take a look at that and see how you can position yourself to get your threats going while their plan isn't going faster than yours. Because Arcanist is a really strong deck, but it's definitely not the strongest on paper in Pioneer. Like, if I go Stitcher Supplier into Young Pyromancer into Village Rites and my mono green opponent goes Elf, Elf Vivian, I'm going to lose. But if I kill their elf and then I play my... I get to develop more board. I get to interact in ways that are better for me. So I wouldn't say there's, like, a card that I specifically look for with Thoughtseize. I look for the information and then I think how the game is going to play out, and that I try to like hit their pressure point, try and make them stumble as much as you can, and then punish them. And this can change depending on the threats you have as well. If you have Young Pyromancer, you can try and apply more pressure to the board. If you have Arcanist, you can set up for the second Discord spell. So I think Thoughts is a really skill-intensive card, but it's also really rewarding.
And I was going to say, in the sideboard also, you have two Despise and two Duress,
which is adding
into the discard effects. When are you setting those in?
So the Duress, I think it's pretty clear. Like when your opponent is playing a combo deck like Lotus Field, or when they're playing a control deck, I don't know if this exists now, but I have this in my sideboard. Then you just want the extra discard spells, because going a discard spell into Arcanist into like attack with it, discard spell again, is just so backbreaking. The Despises are my baby. They are like, I was looking for another one mana interactive card that could interact favorably with like bigger creatures than planeswalkers. Because Spark Harvest, as good as it is, does need setup, and Bloodthirst first costs 4. So that's not exactly what I was looking for. And then I realized the only cards I want to take from Mono Green and from Vampires are their creatures and their walkers, and Despise exists. So I tried one like a few months ago, and it was really, really good. I liked it a lot, just as a way to like up your one mana discard spells count by just a bit. With the way the metagame looks right now, I feel like playing two is justified. I like them a lot.
I like it. I think it's awesome. I mean, we don't have a lot of the really good, you know, one drops like, was it the Inquisition of Kozilek like Modern does. Yeah. So having more effects at one mana is great. All right, Kevin.
So I have a couple more that I'm thinking of. So one thing that I'm always wondering with this deck is, if you've got Young Pyromancer and you've got Dreadhorde Arcanist, which one's usually more important for you to get to stick to the field? So, like, if you don't know what they have, which one do you play on turn two? And if you know they have removal, which one are you going to play into removal? Whereas, which one would you rather get value off of?
Wow.
Is there usually one that's better, or does it kind of depend?
So, almost always getting, like, Arcanist online earlier is better, especially if you have a Thoughtseize. That's like, Thoughtseize into Arcanist is almost unbeatable for like a lot of decks in the format. Especially if you have Claim Fame in your hand, right? Because this is what Claim Fame does to the deck. Let's say you go turn one Thoughtseize, you take their push, you play Arcanist, but they drew another push, they kill your Arcanist. You just get to untap, play your third land, go Claim, return Arcanist, Fame, give it haste, attack Thoughtseize you, and you undid everything they wanted to do.
Oh.
Which is,
you know, years ago I used to do the same thing with Abbot of Carolkeep, and that was a great feeling, but I feel like Arcanist is even better at it.
Yeah, Arcanist is really a really strong card. So I usually like, if you can try and get Arcanist going, it's usually worth trying. Now,
okay.
And usually waiting for Young Pyromancer to go online, like my favorite plays include like going Young Pyromancer on 3 with another spell immediately. Because getting the first token is really important. It enables your Village Rites and your Spark Harvests. So getting that extra body tends to be really big. But sometimes I deviate from this pattern. For example, when I have Claim Fame in my hand and I want to make sure I have board presence, I'll play the Pyromancer on 2, and even if they kill it, I can just go, especially if it's like with a Walker or something, like a Vivian minus use like a Llanowar off to kill it, you just go Claim Pyromancer back, give it haste, get a token, and suddenly you're like ahead on board again. And sometimes, and I think that's a really big part of this deck, they just don't have it. Sometimes you just play Arcanist and you get to one tap and you just win the game because your opponent didn't draw the push. And I really like playing these kind of proactive strategies because you make your opponent have it, and sometimes they don't, and you get easy wins.
All right, I've got one more question because it's something that I'm always struggling with this deck, is you're going to bring back Kroxa, you have to exile a bunch of cards from your graveyard. So you don't have an Arcanist, you don't have a Claim to Fame, but you might draw one. Do you exile sorceries and instants from your yard, or do you exile creatures from your yard? Like, which one would you rather leave when you're exiling things with Kroxa?
So it really depends on the spot you're in, but First of all, you can always exile the lens. That's the easiest part.
Yeah.
And then I usually try to leave like one creature of each type. So even leaving Stitcher Supplier in the yard can be huge when you have a Kroxa, because one Claim Fame suddenly is worth like three cards in your yard. And getting that Kroxa again.
Or a Lurrus that you grab.
Yeah. Or a Lurrus that you grab, exactly. And cards like Thoughtseize, once you have Kroxa in play, tend to lose value, because Kroxa is great at stripping your opponent's last one or two cards, which is, I think, a really big part that we haven't actually touched on while playing Thoughtseize. You often don't have to take like the expensive cards, because Kroxa will just mop them up. You're going to take their early plays, they're going to be trying to hit land drops, and it's really hard to hit your 6 land drop and play a 6 drop and not die when your opponent has a Kroxa. So I usually try to leave like one of each creature, unless I have like multiple Iconists, so I have like another Arcanist in hand, or I don't have any more relevant spells in the yard, then I'm free to get rid of them. And depends on the matchup. Thoughtseize, I almost never Thoughtseize like for the third time versus Burn, so I will just exile this, because I don't see a world where they draw a card and I want to Thoughtseize them and they don't burn me to death in response. And usually I try to leave Claim Fame as much as I can in the graveyard, because hasting a Kroxa is a really big deal. Hasting Arcanists, hasting Pyromancer, hasting Lurrus won me a lot of games. Versus Burn too, where you just gain 5 life and they're just suddenly dead.
Okay, yeah, that's always a tough consideration. I think that's one of the harder things with the deck, is figuring out what you want to leave as your graveyard resources.
Yeah, and it comes a lot by playing the deck. If you play the deck enough, you're going to make some mistakes, and you're going to figure out what would have mattered and what wouldn't have, and you learn as you go.
Yeah, I would say this deck is highly interactive. Like you said, you know, you're always looking at their hand, you're using all that information, you have to make the correct choice. I would say this is a pretty rewarding deck to play. Would you agree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's one of the reasons I like playing the deck a lot. Not only it fits my style of play, I think it more than it, like more than Kroxa being a really good card that I like to play, the deck really rewards you for making these micro decisions like on turn 3 that are going to pay off on turn 7. And I feel like the more I play with the deck, the better I get, the better I understand it. And I feel like I get the opportunity to make decisions that matter. Like, I feel like I have agency with the deck, which is a really nice feeling, and it gets me engaged in the game.
Okay. Kevin, did you have anything else you wanted to add? Anything else you want to ask?
No, I think those are definitely some of the things I've struggled with the deck, and great to get your opinion on them. I think that other people, when they're playing it, they're going to hopefully be able to think back and be like, oh, yeah, no, I want to leave that. I'll get rid of those Thoughtseize, even though I've got a Dreadhorde Arcanist, I'm never going to cast it. Things like that.
I think really the most important part is try and visualize how the game looks in 2-3 turns, and like try to position yourself for that kind of game.
That's kind of like a chess deck. Think ahead.
I like that. That's fun.
So yeah, Kevin, I think you said you had a question.
Yeah, so it was a cool question that I think that you had written, Ryan, is what are you looking for this deck in the future? Like, what are some holes that you, when you see new cards printed, that you're hoping will fill somewhere in this deck?
Okay, hear me out. I want Lightning Bolt and Faithless Looting.
Okay, there we go, yeah. Obviously.
Like, these would be the absolutely broken cards to give this deck. But I think it's a really good exercise in understanding what matters, right? So Lightning Bolt is this one mana interactive card. It's like Thoughtseize. It's so flexible in the problems it can solve. And when I say solve, I also mean like Bolt, you're dead is a really good way to solve problems. So
it's the best card advantage is killing your opponent when they've got cards in their hand.
Okay, or when they don't have anything, that's even better. But Lightning Bolt is obviously like a great card. So cards like Wild Slash are just a bit too weak, I think, for the deck to play. So, like, better one mana interactive cards will obviously add to the deck. And Faithless Looting is a cantrip. It's, like, a really good cantrip. And in this deck, it would just be better than Village Rites, because you have so many cards you already want in the yard. And you need so... It feels like playing Legacy to an extent when you play this deck because your curve is so low. You can easily win a game never hitting your fourth land drop because you get to double spell every turn regardless. So I think what I'd be looking for is obviously one mana spells that are proactive and give you flexibility and advantage. And I think the second thing I would look to is like secondary engines. So I mentioned before that the Young Pyromancer is really good for the deck with the Village Rites, but that they come with costs. Imagine if instead of playing Young Pyromancer, you could just play Dark Confidant. And maybe Magmatic Channeler is close enough to that that we should try it. But two mana threats that like give you an alternative game plan that also fits well into your main shell could be really important for this deck. So that's what I'm on the lookout for.
Doubtful we'll get looting again, but I'd be happy.
One can hope.
Hey, something like that. That makes sense. All right.
Should we move on to matchups?
Have we got anything else there? Yeah, if you want to talk a little bit about some of your best and worst matchups with the deck, I think that would be a great view for anyone who's trying to understand this new post-ban format. Yeah. You know, I know there's no hard and fast meta in place, but if you can say, you know, some generalizations, I think that's always great. We'd like to go
over there's some decks that haven't really changed, like Burn, right? You could talk about probably.
So this deck doesn't have bad matchups. That's really nice. I'm half kidding. I do think that this deck's tough matchups were decks that got hit really hard by bannings. So until people figure out how to build Jeskai Luka again, or Esper Poob, or 5-color Niv, then this deck just, I think, is really well positioned.
Well, Teferi ban right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, thank you. as much as I said I think they shouldn't have banned it, I'm pretty happy they did. So I do think that you can mostly... So I would say you have three types of matches, right? There are the matches where push is amazing and Thoughtseize is awful, like Burn, right? So it would be like Burn. I guess it's almost only that. Maybe Mono Black Aggro too, where it's like just low to the ground aggro. They don't do anything fancy. They just try to kill you. So in those matchups, you're pretty well set up because they don't tend... You tend to be able to navigate the game to the point where you disrupt their early plays enough that either an Arcanist or Pyromancer sticks and you win the game that way. Because Pyromancer is really good versus them. It just floods the board, lets you make favorable blocks, favorable trades, leads you to the late game. And Arcanist is obviously lights out if you ever untap with it and a push in the yard. It's just that ridiculous. So this is one kind of matches. So in that, I would put, as I said, Burn and Mono Black Aggro, I guess, and also Auras to an extent, where you need to deal with the board and their cards in hand don't matter because all the cards in their hand are the same card. So you can't Thoughtseize their weak spots. It's a straight 1-for-1, but you take 2 damage and that matters a lot. The other kinds of matchups are somewhere in the other end of the spectrum where push is bad, and you just want to disrupt their hand as much as you can. These tend to be Yorion Piles and Lotus Field and Niv-Mizzet, where board presence, well, they don't actually have a lot of board presence, at least not in the early game. So your goal is to try and chain a discard spell into a 2-drop into board discard spells and just take away the resources. And in those matchups... Yeah, these are basically those matchups, and I actually think they're like quite unpopular right now. So we have to see how the metagame shapes up before I can say more about how these play out.
I mean, Niv-Mizzet seems scary just because, you know, if they land a Niv-Mizzet and get like 5 cards that you just got rid of, you know, they just refilled their hand.
So we just had this conversation. I had this conversation with Claudio and one more person from the team, which I can't remember. Where one was saying, like, the Rakdos player was saying, I think Niv is unfavorable for us. And Claudio was saying, I think Rakdos is unfavorable for me. And I think that the matchup is just very close. And it's really all about how your cards line up. If you can stop them from resolving a Niv for, like, the first 5-6 turns, then you just get to set up much better. And then when they resolve a Niv, it doesn't matter because you go Spark Harvest your Niv, Arcanist Thoughtseize your best card, Biscape Croxa, and they're still far behind on board. But if they resolve like a turn 4 or 5 Niv, and you don't have an Arcanist going, or a large board with Pyromancer, you just don't have the time to punish them for playing a clunky card.
Yeah, and they also have, I think it's a really Clarion. Interesting
matchup. Yeah, and it depends. If they have Clarion, that could be a real thorn in your side. Shadow's Verdict is probably the best sweeper you can play against this deck. It's really tough to beat. So if they have access to Verdict in the main deck, this definitely makes game one much more difficult. You do get more discard spells post-board, so that makes things somewhat easier.
Did you say Mono Green Planeswalkers was also a bad matchup, or is that a good matchup?
No, okay, so I really am in a weird spot where I just don't think this deck has bad matchups right now, because I've been winning against mostly everything. But I think a lot of it comes down to experience with the deck and in the matchups. So I think Mono Green, for example, is a third type of deck where I would put like Mono Green and Vampires and Spirits, where all of your disruption is good, but their plan can definitely beat you through a Thought Seize and a push. So it's really about navigating the game to a really favorable spot. So that means when you Thought Seize a Mono Green Planeswalker deck, you really have to think hard if you want to attack mana or threats early in the game. And that can dictate, like, your choice in turn one can dictate who wins on turn 8.
So the choices are much more important in those matchups.
I think so. It's much less, like, point and click. It's much less clear. Their cards are all very unique, and their plans can definitely punish you very hard. I said before, you get two Thoughtseize 2-3 times a game easily, which means you're starting at 12 life if you had a Shockland, for example. And at that point, the Spirit Spear doesn't need a lot of threats to attack you to death. So if you can't find that second Fatal Push, you might just die because you Thoughtseized one too many times. So I would say that if I need to sum this up, any deck that can stop an early Arcanist or stopping an early Arcanist is a really big cost for it, tends to be like a pretty good matchup. So Mono Green Walkers, I think, is a pretty good matchup for the deck, just pretty hard to play. Also Spirits, if you get to one tap with Arcanist, it's so good and they have so few ways to stop it. And Auras as well. You need to time your removal spell very precisely, but Arcanist is lights out. These are like what I would consider to be the easier matchups. And then some of the more tougher ones would be Vampires, when it can go to the late game with you and like grind you out, and you have to figure out a way to stop Sorin because Sorin just kills every creature you have. And Spirits, where they can just attack you to death because you can't block them.
Yeah.
Like Elemental Tokens don't stop Rata Chains. And then Lotus Field is always a tight matchup because you are disrupting them a lot, but your clock tends to be pretty slow. Unless you get a really early Croxa or something.
That's the biggest problem I've had is Rakdos, I think, has very poor finishers.
Yes. Or the finishers that are good cost more than two.
Yeah.
And then you need to. But I think this is what Croxa excels in. This is why the deck plays four Croxa and four Stitcher Supplier, and you really want to hit the first Croxa. Because once you start grinding your opponent out of resources, Croxa turns the corner really fast. And I think playing with Croxa and realizing how can you time your Croxas to get the most advantage, and that sometimes means trying to make your opponent discard the land and take three, and sometimes it means catching their next spell. And that changes depending on the matchup and how many Croxas you've drawn. And how many Claim to Fames you've drawn. Because you can claim a Croxa just for the trigger. And that's a play you make. Because sometimes Bolt to the Lava Spike is what you need. That's
Lightning Bolt, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes that's what you need. So I definitely think Croxa, not having Uro to contend with, is just so good for this deck. It's actually insane how much it adds to it. You just escape the Croxa. And they're usually just dead a turn later. because they don't have any more cards in hand.
You know, we were talking about how, you know, Uro needed to go in this format. Do you think that we'll reach a point where Kroxa will have to get banned in the future?
I think Kroxa has better counterplays to it than Uro. Because Uro just drew you into more resources to fuel it again. Mm. So you would Uro and you would draw a Fabled Passage, and suddenly you're up a card for your next Uro. And you gain the life. And it snowballs much faster. Yeah. And Kroxa, you need to play Stygia Supplier because it doesn't just feed itself. And you want to escape it more than once. Also, Kroxa getting easily hit by push really matters in Pioneer, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Kevin, is there anything else you wanted to add? I think we kind of covered most of the things I wanted to talk about.
No, yeah, that's definitely most of what I wanted to talk about here. I think this is cool. This is great. I'm looking forward to, you know, I expect anyone who's going to be watching or playing a lot of Pioneer will be seeing a lot more of the deck. Hopefully. So hopefully if you guys, you know, listen to this episode once or twice, get a nice idea of what's really going on in the mind of the Arcanist player, as well as if you're playing it, hopefully picked up a tip or two. Should we move towards the end of our show?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, before we do the closing here, you know, there are a couple decks, you know, you had your mid-range deck that you kind of wanted to talk about, and I kind of want to talk about Waste Not, but I think we can maybe talk about that in the chat later on, so look for that discussion.
Yeah, you keep trying to... You're hyping me up more than I am. You know, I like my gold span dragons and things, but I'm not sure if that's... It's a very different...
I would like to get your input on that later, though, Amit, if you don't mind.
Sure, yeah. I'm always down to play.
All right, so that's going to bring us... it's going to bring us to the end of our show here. Guys, if you want to hear more about this kind of content, if you want to follow our show, best thing to do is to follow us on Twitter at MTGPioneer. That's where I'm usually posting. You know, I'm rehosting all kinds of whenever Pioneer players are streaming, whenever Pioneer players are doing anything. Best place to see what's going on. So go ahead and do that. Also, you can find links to our Discord there. There's a perfect way to, you know, go the next level and interact with us on a daily basis. That's about it. Ryan, if you want to share your info, and then to our guests.
You guys can find me at Yoshwenky, Yoschwenky on Twitter. And the Discord, definitely. We're going to have this list that he talked about today in our decklist channel, so check that out. And, you know, if you have any other questions for him, you know, just, you know, if doesn't mind, maybe just tag him in the Discord chat and maybe he can help you with your questions about Arcanist.
All right. Yeah, if you have questions, definitely tag me. I am in a lot of Discords and it's kind of hard to keep track, but I would love to talk about today.
So you want to promote your streams and stuff like that?
Yep. So as I said, I am an MTG streamer. I stream 4 times a week, including 2 challenges a week usually. I do that on Twitch at EkerosMTG. That's EkerosMTG. And you can find me on Twitter under the same handle, EkerosMTG. I post my decklists, my thoughts, just everything. Like, if you always have any questions, just feel free to hit me up because I love talking about Magic more than I love playing Magic. So it's always great to be on the show. Let me rant on for an hour.
Perfect. All right, that's going to bring us to the end of our show. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you for joining us, giving us all of this insight about a very exciting deck in the Pioneer format in this wide open meta that we've got right now. So one more time, that was EkerosMTG. Go ahead and give him some follows, some likes. Any last shout-outs?
I'm good.
All right, well then, thank you guys for listening. This is the end of our show. We are the First Pioneers podcast, and we look forward to being your go-to source for Pioneer information online. Signing off.